Dr. Whistler's mother, the Waltons, and Mary's little lamb. Dr. Kildare, Dr. Welby, Dr. Schweitzer, Uncle Sam!
Oh, Mother Goose!
Dr. Seuss!
The bionic woman and man!
For Jack and Jane!
Buffalo Bill!
Peter Rabbit! Peter Pan!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Pod Stallions, and it's a special episode because it's our 50th.
Woohoo!
With me is Jason, as usual, and we've done 50 shows and two mini-sodes. So
yes.
That's an accomplishment. I don't know what the 50th is in gift. Is that jewelry? I don't know.
I think it's toys. I think everybody should send us a toy. That'd be nice.
My wife
would like to differ. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to say, personally, I don't think we look a day over 40 episodes. I think we look pretty good.
I put on a little weight after the mini-sodes.
I think you know, at 50, we're doing okay. We're still pretty spry. So we had this idea, because it's the 50th episode, maybe we'd throw it out to the listeners.
Actually, it was
however
your
many
idea.
There are. Was it my idea?
It was yours. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I'm very proud of it.
Well, it
I think
well.
It's a good idea.
Yeah,
I think it worked well. Yeah. So what we did was kind of throw it out to the listeners and said, "Hey, we're going to do this 50th episode, and you know, throw us some topics that wouldn't necessarily be a 90-minute episode that we can talk about." And the suggestions were fantastic.
It was
and
a deluge.
In fact, it was. And in fact, we're gonna do that very thing. We're gonna pick a couple things to talk about. But first, before we do, I just want to read off the names of the people that
we got a lot of full episode ideas we're gonna use too, though.
We got so many great ideas
that,
and some of them are just me just looking at them going, oh, wow, of course, that's just a natural thing. But Brian Fee, sci-fi comedies, suggested sci-fi comedies. Thomas Molesky suggested Micronauts, which we actually did.
Yes.
Quite a while ago, I forget, but great suggestion. Scott J. Saluga, smaller toy lines, I think it was a suggestion. Just
obscure.
You know, brief sort of obscure toy lines. Joe Stearns, Hammer Films, which, my God, we could do two episodes on that. Brian Daly, TV Superheroes. We did that. Did we not do Hammer?
Yes,
I thought we did Hammer.
I don't think we've done Hammer. We've actually danced around Hammer a bunch of times.
We have. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to do that. Brian Daly, TV Superheroes, which we actually did,
yes.
But great suggestion. Craig, I'm going to get your name wrong. Craig Zadius, Zidaus. Sorry if I mispronounced it. Strictly 80s, which I think is a really cool idea, because most of the stuff we talk about is right in the pocket of right to like early 80s, 60s, 70s, you know, early 80s. That would be fun. Just you know, how that affected us, whatever we watched or, you know, bought. Evan Hansen suggested 70s variety shows, which we have also talked about, danced around. That's a show. Darren Height, the great Darren Height, who uses funky letters on Twitter. Growing Up Commercials. I love it. The commercials that ran around the clock. You could talk about Loblaws and Shatner doing the awesome supermarket commercials. Jad Bean Spielberg, awesome suggestion.
Just the man himself or his work?
Just his hat. They wanted us to talk about the number of ball caps that he has.
Okay.
Michael Scudero, Buck Rogers, which I think we did.
We did Buck and
Star.
Yeah, Buck and Galactica. Now, looking back on it, I wish we'd done just a whole Buck episode, but, you know.
Yeah, or a whole Glenn Larson.
Glenn A. Larson show, yeah.
Alias Smith and Jones. Dan Isdow, Hanna-Barbera, another great one.
Oh, sure.
Michael Scudero, another great one. $6 Million Man, again, with another suggestion.
I thought we did that. You know what? I had to go looking through our whole library, and it's like, we haven't done this. So
we haven't done, which kind of shocks me, because you're a huge fan of $6 Million Man. So we'll have to do that. Brian Albright suggested 70s comic books, another great suggestion. Richard Rich suggested stretch toys. I had to remind him that this is a family-friendly program, and we wouldn't be talking about such things. Matt Weber, Jaws, Eco-Terror Flicks. I love it. These are all great full episode ideas. Greg Affa suggested cereal toys / Topps cards.
Oh.
Holy cats, we could do a whole episode just on Topps trading cards. Tom Beiter, B-E-I-T-E-R, suggested Mego comic action heroes, 3 3/4 inch. I think that would be a good episode for you, for sure.
I love those. And I'm standing in front of a whole bunch of them.
See? Yeah. Michael Simhauser suggested Falco. No, that's not right. I can't read my writing. Oh, favorite foreign movies and TV shows.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
one. We could talk about everything from Jacques Tati to, you know,
Almodovar. Twitter. I don't know if you got what Laura Suto would like us to do, our very pre-promised Black Hole episode, but only if,
I saw that.
If David is involved, which we, of course, said David's
got to be involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was his suggestion. Initially, maybe.
Yeah, I know, and that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we gotta do that for sure.
Yeah.
Anthony Kahn suggested Remco. Awesome.
Very cool.
Ton of Remco stuff. Ryan Blackmore, Nostalgia of Our Childhood, which I think was really crazy, kind of meta. You know, I was talking about this with someone the other day, where there's footage of Paul McCartney and John Lennon. I think it's either the Magical Mystery Tour TV thing is being edited, or it's probably Yellow Submarine being edited. I forget, but you don't hear them talking. It's all, you know, the narrator. So, look, this is what the Beatles are doing today, but this is their thing. And they're in this, and in this edit bay, there are posters on the wall of, like, Bogart and, you know, Raquel Welch and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
those were really big in the 70s.
1967, 68. There was that nostalgia for the 40s. And so I remember stuff growing up that there was this nostalgia thing for my parents turned me on to all the black and white movies, all the comedies, you know, but that's an episode in itself. I think where the nostalgia, our nostalgia for, you know, another time that we lived in and what nostalgia was going on at that time.
Yeah.
You know, what people were looking at is, you know, iconic stuff. So that's a really cool idea. I love
it
that.
It is. It's great.
Also, Alan Hummel, holy cow, 70s disaster movies, cartoons, Mel Brooks, Kung Fu, and Charo.
Yes.
Which, believe it or not, is one of the things we're going to talk about in this episode, Charo.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a Twitter, too. And this was a theme that kept running. I've got Joe Duffy saying top 10 Grail toys, David Gutierrez saying you're great white whales. I've got another guy who goes by Commander Koenig, and he wanted Space 1999. Go figure. Clyde Points Dave wanted Shogun Warriors. But I do kind of, you know, the trend keeps coming out about Grails and white whales, and we thought that was a lot of fun touch upon, and that is, you know. But rather than just toys, we both collect a lot of different things, and
So it could be anything. It could be, you know, a first pressing LP or whatever that we've always kind of wanted to have, you know, based on the stuff that we collect. So that was, that jumped out because it kept popping up with different people. And the, all of this, by the way, is hugely flattering, that you guys would take the time.
Oh yeah.
Again, you know, I have, I don't know how many people are listening. I always feel like it's maybe 30 people, you know, in a room and we could all hang out because we're probably all like-minded if you're listening to our nonsense. But regardless, it's very, very cool to get the suggestions and things like Holy Grail. Another one from Kevin Mayle was our day jobs. Talk about what our lives, you know, are really, what they kind of consist of, which is hugely flattering since we're both male prostitutes.
Right.
It's kind of flattering that anybody would want to know more about what we do and how we work. So we'll talk about that for a minute as well. And then a couple more here. Ray Barnes says, Big Jim, TV shows that lasted one season or less. What a great flippin' idea that is.
Yeah.
Just these...
canceled too soon.
You know, one and done, canceled shows. That'd be great. And another one,
that could just be called Every Show Brian Ever Liked.
Right. All the stuff we loved in one box set. Ray Sharif Castile suggested Bigfoot in Search of Dime Store Memories. All of those are fantastic. But I got to add one thing here that happened just yesterday that completely knocked me out. I found a Danger Mouse rack toy on eBay. Gordy was the company that made these rack toys. And ironically, Brian is Wikipedia when it comes to this stuff, but I don't think he has any photographic evidence in a catalog.
You know what it is, too, is I don't have any 80s Gordy catalogs.
Okay, there you go. That's what it is. So, and this is the sort of thing that, you know, this is like a little pair of plastic handcuffs, but just there never was a toy line for Danger Mouse. There were some stuffed animals back in the 80s and some PVC figures, but it never really got out there. There were annuals and things like that. So the fact that there were U.S. rack toys, and I've got one of them already. So I found this rack toy, and I was like, oh, wow. I think I made a bit, or, you know, an offer on the thing or something, and next thing you know, it's done. I send the payment. We're done. And I get a note yesterday from Scott Kerbow. Unbelievably, he writes me and says, hey, you know what? I listened to your show. I love it. I love what you guys do. I'm refunding your money and sending you the rack toy. You know, thanks so much for all the laughs and the, you know, listening and stuff. And also he recognized me from Biff Bang Pow, that he said, great work on the toy company and, you know, keep it coming sort of thing. I was floored, you know, not only the odds of, you know, ordering something on, you know, finding something on eBay and the person that you're hitting recognizes your name or whatever. Like, that's certainly never happened to me with this. So that was very cool. I wanted to give him a shout out, and he made a couple suggestions, one of which is one of my favorites, British shows. Avengers, Blackadder, Young Ones. We could do a whole episode just on all the British stuff that we've loved.
We would have to hone that to, like, comedies, sci-fi, heck, even kids' shows with me.
Yeah, you grew up with a lot more
stuff. In the land of chalk drawings.
Yeah. So that's all of those are great ideas for full episodes. The three that kind of popped out that we thought we'd kind of put in the soup here today are, you know, day jobs, which will just be kind of brief, and then Holy Grails, and we got some time left over. We will talk about Charo.
Yeah,
and Brian will do his impression of Charo. I said Brian will also do his impression of Charo.
It's more of a visual
thing. Chi-chi-chi. She had a catchphrase, didn't she?
Coochie-coochie.
Coochie-coochie. All right, you got to work on that by the end of the episode. I want to hear some Charo in there.
Bill McInerney, I probably said that wrong, also mentioned That's Incredible and Real People, two shows that I watched a lot of.
Yes.
It's like, wow.
Who's the woman? Who's the woman on Real People? Purcell? Sarah Purcell?
Sarah Purcell, yeah. Steve Stevenson. Sarah Purcell, Byron Allen, John Barber.
And you know what Byron Allen's doing now?
Yeah, he's doing like his own... comedy.
He's going to all the junkets. Well, he goes to all the junkets and stuff and sits down or, you know, has slightly in-depth interviews of movies that are coming out or people in the cast. And it's just him. It's just a one-man show. And he's he's living like a king, as far as I know, from people that I've talked to. But it's just it's minimal crew, and it's he owns all the footage, and it goes around the world. Basically.
Yeah, he has,
and he literally hasn't changed. He looks almost exactly the same as he did on That's Incredible. He looks incredible. That's incredible.
He was on Real People.
Oh, Real People.
Yeah.
Well, That's Incredible. He looks like a real person on that. That's Incredible was who was Jack?
John Davison, Fran Tarkenton, yeah. And Kathy Lee Crosby.
Right. That's right.
Yes.
Kind of a precursor to reality television, kind of, and the stuff.
I think that show, those shows may have, boy, we're doing a whole segment on this, may have been created out of a writer's strike. I thought that's why they were created. I can't remember.
Can I just say, as well, as long as we're doing this, it's really cool to get the feedback that we have. Please keep it coming.
Oh, yeah.
And not because it fuels our egos, which it does, but it's really cool to feel like, you know, this is as close as we'll get to like being in a room together and getting to talk about. I love nothing more than, you know, to talk with people that appreciate stuff. And I think other people do as well. I won't get into it because it's, I'll get emotional, but yesterday I was lucky enough to be in a recording session with Tony Visconti, who was Bowie's main producer. And when I started talking about this extended edition of The Next Day that came out and all the stuff on it, and this guy's a legend, Visconti, and he's looking at me like, how do you know this stuff? You know, and it was an immediate connection to talk about these more obscure tracks that he was part of. And we were best buddies just like that. And that is the secret handshake we always talk about between people, that you just connect on something. Or, you know, then we started talking about Clockwork Orange and, you know, Wardrobe, Clockwork Orange, and it just kept going from there and kind of spitballed. So, you know, we'd love nothing more than to be in a room with all you guys and have this time to talk about this stuff, because it's very cool and we don't really get to do that. So thanks for listening, and thanks for all the suggestions and all the very kind words. We really do appreciate it.
It is very encouraging. You know, this is a fun thing to do, but it's so much more validating knowing that someone's digging it. So,
it's true, because we can kind of measure that stuff, but we really, you know, it's like the old saying about you.
What we can't measure is, yeah, I can measure how many people checked it out. But I can't remember how many people are actually engaged or liked it.
And and sat through it and listened. Exactly. So the only way we know this stuff, or what you might want to hear more of, or, you know, what we might say that offends you, or less of, is letting us know.
People are pretty good about letting me know what they like less of.
What if they said they want less of?
Oh, you know, honestly, I can't come up with a... But I've had.
Did they say Lindsay? Less of Lindsay?
Well, somebody once complained about your constant smoking, which made me laugh because I was like,
constant smoking?
When is he smoking? You know,
I'm not smoking.
Somebody once accused me of farting in an episode.
I do loads of cocaine every episode to keep the energy up.
Who
maybe that's what he's hearing.
Yeah,
maybe he's
hearing
me, you know, with some China White. No, I do not smoke, and if I did, I wouldn't do it in the house, that's for sure. So thanks again, everybody. So we're going to get rolling here on the time we have left and the stuff that we talked about. So let's start with Brian. I'd like you to tell people what your bag is and everything you do, because Brian is, you know, he is Plaid Stallions and he is Pod Stallions. Like, if it weren't for the Plaid Stallions name and base, you know, to come off of this, you know, we wouldn't be doing this. So it's Brian's, you know, Brian's baby, so to speak, Brian's rack toy. So let's hear what about your secret identity. We can, you know, say everybody can keep it quiet.
Yeah, it's kind of mild mannered, to be honest with you. I'm can't really get into too deep of details about work. It's one of the rules, but, you know, I'm in sales and marketing, and I do everything from greeting cards and things like that to picking licenses for products, and I also deal in licensed products. So, you know, I get to say, okay, well, we're going to order heavy on Star Wars or Dora or whatever, Dory, actually. Things mm-hmm. like that. And it's a work-a-day job. I ironically do create catalogs and write the content, which is funny because I also collect catalogs.
Well, see, I don't know if I knew that you wrote content for catalogs. I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And not just my catalogs, but like other customers' catalogs and that sort of thing.
Right.
Right. You know, it's a living and it's interesting and it's very high pressure. So I think that's one of the reasons that I enjoy doing what I'm doing. It's my hobby. Flatsteins is definitely not a business by any stretch of the imagination, but it is something I really enjoy doing, and that's why I do it. I need an outlet. And
yeah, but aren't you also the founder of Odeon Toys?
Odeon Toys, it's a fake toy company. But yes, somewhat. I mean, I did produce.
It's cool. It's super cool.
It's a couple of legitimate action figures, and
yeah, and you have pursued licenses on your own, trying to get stuff made, and you produced.
I'm about Captain Canuck. 50 with Captain Canuck. That was a license. I actually didn't pursue. My friend brought that to me, and
House of Frightenstein. You kind of knocked on some doors. Yeah.
I knocked on some doors. They've knocked back since then, which is nice.
Oh, really?
But I don't know if I have it in me to give. To be honest with you, just getting to you, I don't know how you do it with China. It's like a roller coaster ride. And there's, you know, for everybody who looks at a toy and an action figure and says, I could have done better. No.
Yeah.
No, you couldn't unless you fly to China, speak the language, and watch these guys make this stuff. They'll break your heart. I don't want to get on a soapbox, but
what you didn't mention are the 12 nightmares before you even get to China.
Oh yes.
To try to get that madness done, you know. And then when it comes to either an original toy or especially with licenses.
Yeah.
I had somebody recently, I was very good natured about it, but I had someone recently, you know, praise it. Suddenly somebody bought all the Twilight Zone 3¾-inch figures. They went crazy. There was a sale, Entertainment Earth. They grabbed every character, and they're missing a couple, and they're putting it out there saying, who's got this? Either? You know what I'd love to see? And like one of the first things, and it was, where's Rod Serling?
Because you didn't think of that.
I had to jump in and go, anybody that knows me for 5 minutes would know that would have been the first thing out of the gate that I wanted to do, that there must be a reason why it's not happening.
Yeah.
And then it's like they start listing all the characters from all the shows that they want, and it's like you got to go to each one of those estates, whoever's left, and get the clearance because, you know, CBS doesn't have the likeness rights of all these people, you know? Anyway, that's a whole other nightmare. But,
yeah, you know what? I don't have anything in that. I should say that because the first two properties I made were my characters. So
that's
and
right.
I, you know, I had a wonderful head sculptor. My one of my closest friends, Sean Sampson, did it.
Right.
On Captain Canuck, the license holder was a dream. The creator is a dream to deal with.
Right.
I had on all my projects. I had great help from. Paul Clark, Dr. Mego, who, you know, was fantastic on handling it on this side. And, you know, Captain Canuck was sculpted by Andrew Kovalt, who's awesome. I don't have any problems with that. It's when it leaves the continent that's scary.
Right. Right. It's true. You know, we had an issue, that fell through the cracks somewhere between, you know, every step of it and the final product was the Tom Baker 8-inch figure that we did, the cloth, you know, cloth outfit, 8-inch figure, and his hat doesn't fit on his head. And it was like I'd seen every photo, and I saw the prototype with the hat on the head, and then somewhere between that and release, we didn't get to see the final hat on the character's head when it was done. And something went wrong between that and the release, and that's how he came out. So, I feel you. I feel you on China. So you got other stuff in the pipeline, possibly with Odeon.
Yeah, possibly. Right now, I'm just concentrating on writing another book.
Your book. Talk about your book.
Mall of Justice, which I have talked about, which is about personal appearances by costume characters. It's an obsession of mine.
Yes, but you have a book that's already out. It sold very well.
Yeah. And we did a whole episode on it.
Yes, we did.
And, you know, in my
Who wrote the introduction? Was there given an introduction for that book, or did it just go out?
Yeah, it was some guy. In my private life, I think people might be shocked to find out that I actually am kind of into athletics. I'm a hiker. I'm an avid bicycler. I swim 3 times a week.
Karate? You're a karate man?
I haven't done that in years, but I was an avid, obsessional karate guy for years.
But you could kick someone's ass, is what I'm trying to say.
I think the beauty of karate is that you walk in the door wanting to do that, and by the time you leave, you go, that's really futile and stupid.
Right. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good way to walk away.
But anyway, you know, that's who I am, basically. I have
a family. You got a beautiful family.
I have a lovely wife, a lovely understanding wife, and 2 great kids, and a very, very lazy dog.
Yeah, you have a very cool family. You hit the jackpot. And I haven't met your wife, but she just sounds amazing, and just, you know, she goes along for whatever ride you go on. I think that's what it's all about. It's
I think one of the most beautiful things that happens is our compromises and our synergy. We will pick a day, we'll pick a town, go hiking in that town, have lunch there, and then the afternoon is spent finding antique malls and vintage toy stores.
Right.
I love adventures with my family like that.
Yeah, you guys do some really cool, really cool left of center stuff, and you turn your kids on to all these great, you know, I want to say vintage, that's the wrong word, but you know, these shows and properties that are decades and decades before their generation, and they dig them. And you know, isn't your daughter like big? She loves. Is it your daughter that loves Godzilla? Or your
sister? Oh yeah, she's been to a couple Godzilla movies with me.
That's awesome.
She likes vintage horror. We watched Tank Girl the other night. She really fell in love with that.
Awesome.
She listens to, you know, like you gotta be careful. You want to make sure that they fit in at school and they listen to their own stuff and, you know, dig their own music. But she really loves the Marcy Playground.
Okay.
And the Eels.
Oh, nice.
If she gets a hold of my iPod, wow. I'm listening to Secret Squirrel by Marcy Playground.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
she can, I can tell right there she's going to be a music person probably the rest of her life. If that's kind of what her taste is now.
She has a killer
awesome.
Voice, so I hope so.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll get into it. Maybe she'll do it professionally. So I think most people know that I live in Los Angeles. I'm from Minnesota, Minneapolis. Well, I was born in St. Paul, and I've been out in L.A. now for 21 years. And in the Twin Cities, I was an actor, did production work, and did voiceover work as well. So when I came out to L.A., tried to kick all that stuff off, jumped on a movie right away, had a couple of friends that were out here. Actually, one friend that I knew pretty well that was out here. And, you know, slowly started to get into production work. I started as a runner, you know, with a shitty car and a suspended license, which I didn't know about. Driving around L.A., you know, delivering stuff. And that led to the next thing and the next thing. The next thing you know, I'm you know, producing Man on the Street pieces for this network. And it just kind of escalated, you know, from there in production. But it got further away from voiceover and, you know, performance type stuff. So anyway, I always feel like you have to wear a lot of hats in Los Angeles because you don't know how long things are going to last or if the show goes, when is it going to get picked up and what are you doing in the meantime? So, I got back into voiceover, a little over a decade ago, and I've done loads of stuff, lots of TV series that I've narrated and, you know, like History Channel type things and Food Network, all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, so that is an ongoing thing, auditioning for voiceover stuff. animation, video games, commercials. I'm currently one of, I think, two, from what I've heard, voices of Chrysler, all the Chrysler campaigns here in the U.S., commercials, internet stuff, radio commercials, you know, TV commercials, radio commercials. So that's been very cool. That's been going on like since September, and it's been very nice to, the thing I love the most, to be able to, you know, go and do that and get paid for it is very nice as a recurring thing. Again, you don't know if it's going to go away next month, if it's going to last for 3 or 4 years. You just don't know. You wait for the phone calls to go in. But luckily, I also, you know, write and produce on shows. I've been hired for a lot of game shows to kind of work with the host and add improv and, you know, play with the jokes and stuff. I've written on shows. You know, I also was on a show called Wipeout with ABC. Big outdoor game show, and there was a female host named Jill Wagner, and I was her producer for like 7 seasons. So she had a little earpiece in, and I, you know, I had communication to her. So if I was watching what was going on between her and the contestant, I could feed her jokes and information, because I not only did I have the contestant's information in my hand, just made it look more natural. And during gameplay as well, I'd throw her jokes, you know, as things were going on. So it was a very weird, you know, broadcast news kind of thing, but it worked for a long time. And then, you know, recently I worked on some game shows, and the voiceover thing happened, and, you know, I'm working on a couple of things on my own, trying to get a sitcom pitched, which I might go to London in February to pitch with ITV, and it's with Rich Fulcher, who you got to see.
Yes.
At a show there.
You got me into Noel Fielding and Rich Fulcher live on stage, and I'm richer for it.
He did the Noel Fielding tour, and I saw it here, and Brian saw it there. Got him hooked up.
I got the T-shirt. Did you get the T-shirt?
I got the program.
Oh, and I got the T-shirt, and it terrifies my daughter because it's just Noel Fielding's giant head.
Yeah, I got the program, and at the drinks thing afterwards, I couldn't help myself, so I had Noel sign the program. He drew a little picture. Because actually, I've got the mighty Book of Boosh, the tie-in book that's signed by the whole cast, because Rich did that tour.
Well,
so
nice.
he snagged that, which is very cool. And Noel drew the monkey face, that little monkey logo he always does. So Rich and I came up with a sitcom idea, and we wrote up a trailer. So basically it's like a, you know, 2.5 minute teaser of what the show would be. We shot it back in May. I produced, directed, I'm in it, you know, catered it, the whole, and everyone came out to play for free. We shot it at the improv lab, you know, which we got for a song, which is nice. So that's in my pocket. Rich got busy with some other show he's writing on, and I'm working on a possible animated thing to pitch with another buddy. And then back in 2007, I thought, well, you know, while I'm in between gigs, what should I do to kind of earn some bread? Oh, I'll, you know, get a real estate license. You know, I'll open a coffee shop, something that'll earn while I'm in between things and waiting for the phone to ring and, you know, so on. Had I known then what I know now, I probably would, you know, stopped myself and gone and got a real estate license. But I, you know, co-founded a toy company called Biff Bang Pow. You know, I came up with the name and the concept and all that stuff. And I'm partnered with some folks, and Entertainment Earth is the exclusive distributor of everything we do. Started with Flash Gordon and Big Lebowski, action figures, bobbleheads. And I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but, you know, at this stage, we've got, you know, a dozen licenses and dozens of products. DC, Marvel, Twilight Zone, Big Lebowski, Big Bang Theory, all kinds of stuff. Action figures, Kiss. Go to Entertainment Earth, look up Biff Bang Pow, and that's me. I'm not, you know, making every single decision and, you know, tweaking every little thing, but when it comes to the announcement we're about to make for a license that I've loved for a long time, and certain other licenses especially, I'm very, very hands-on with design and ideas and getting it from concept to to finished product. And now this thing that started with a couple of licenses and a few items is now, you know, we're going to be in Target and Barnes & Noble and Bed Bath & Beyond. All kinds of stuff is coming. Yeah, the Bed Bath & Beyond has this little, like, sort of kiosk with you know, designer-type toys and vinyl toys and stuff.
I bought an Atari Flashback there.
See?
And I couldn't believe that it was there.
They want
that
the...
That I was in a Bed Bath & Beyond.
Well, that's the first weird thing.
Yes.
But they're doing... they want all the pin mates. So they're getting the pin mates.
I unabashedly love the pin mates. They are awesome. And I owe you one, too, because when you guys had the Doctor Who license, you asked me for ideas, and you made probably my number one with a bullet Doctor Who monster as Amigo doll, which was Sutek.
Right.
And
you were part of
grateful.
That.
I bought a whole bunch of those.
Oh yeah, I adore that sculpt. I think that whole line, because I go back and look at it, put it in one of my display cases in my place. And those are the early days. Those are the early days of trying to get it right. And I am so proud. I cannot tell you how proud I am of that line, that the BBC were even on the fence, should we, shouldn't we? And I was in London, and I arranged a meeting to sit down with a couple people, and I brought them one of our Venture Brothers 8-inch figures and said, this is what it's going to be. This, and I pitched them, you know, how much I loved the show since I was a kid. And that was it. That did it. They gave us a license, and it opened it to all these other products that we did. We did very, very well with Doctor Who. I won't go into what happened that we don't have it, but those figures, that's what I wanted to do. From day one, I wanted to replicate the Dennis Fisher stuff that came out, that line. And we did it, except for the giant robot. We did it. You know, all the characters that were in that line, we made as figures. So a Cyberman and the TARDIS and Tom Baker and Leela, K-9, we made them all, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the sculpts on those are just fantastic.
Yeah,
Sutek, the Suntaran, you know, and the very last one we got to do, right under the fence, was the Dalek, the genesis of the Dalek, the 8-inch
Dalek.
Yeah,
that was one of the most understated figures in your line. Like, it came and went. And
yeah.
It was like, that thing is beautiful.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah.
I just adore it.
Yeah.
So we managed to do it for the most part and made some other great products and stuff. But yeah, I forgot about the Sutek. And the Sutek with the red hands. I just love the red.
Yeah.
You know, the red Mego hands.
So perfect Mego, yeah.
And the Suntaran, which was great. It was the only story where a Suntaran had five fingers.
Yeah.
The Suntaran experiment. And it's just that Suntaran sculpt, Steyr, is just dead on. I love it. So, yeah, bittersweet, but we had so much more planned, you know. We finally get to do a Hartnell with Matt Smith for the anniversary. We got in on the anniversary, you know. We wanted to do gold stuff, because that's 50 is gold. And this is a true story. Obviously, we wanted to do a gold TARDIS. We made these great... It was pulling teeth to get to do the black and white TARDIS with the original logo. That was they wanted everything to either have the new logo or the Pertwee logo from the early 70s, which didn't go with whatever the product might be. So we were lucky to get those TARDISes out. I mean, it's great TARDIS bobbles. You just kind of hit, you know, tap it and it, you know, bobbles, and then you press the sound take off, you know, flight sound. And we did a Hartnell with Matt Smith in a tin, and we had so much more planned. We had, you know, Amy Pond and Rory and what's your name, River, and some new Daleks. We had a lot of stuff planned, and then all the classic Doctors. We were going to do everybody. We had Pertwee and Troughton all ready to go. But alas, you know, things change. But so that's kind of who I am. That's my bag, I guess. I have a lot of bags. Co-host the podcast with Brian, and we're both just information junkies, you know. I feel like, you know, even though I'm not the mansion in the hills kind of thing, that everything that I loved kind of, you know, when I was growing up or as a kid, I was able to you know, turn into a living in some way. You know, voices and making goofy sounds and voices and stuff. I loved toys when I was a kid. Half the reason for Biff Bang Pow was I'm going after these things because I want them. Like, no one ever did Flash Gordon. It never got its due. Mm-hmm. And now we were able to... Twilight Zone, you know, 50 years, nobody made anything, you know? I would have wanted that as a kid. I would have been a kid going, oh, God, how come there's no Flash Gordon toys when I go in the store? Yeah. And everything else. But, and then, you know, comedy and, you know, production and stuff. So it's, you know, it's just it's a constant, you know, slog out here. But we do it because we have to, I guess. It's the best way to say it. So that's kind of who we are in a nutshell. I've got a dog called Bowie, which I think we've talked about. He's the coolest dog in the world.
He's kind of the third chair sometimes.
He is. Every now and then he wants to throw his opinion in, but I call him the thin white and brown Duke.
Yeah.
not quite totally white. So there's our day jobs. If any of you are still listening, we're gonna move on to the next topic, which is our holy grails.
Yeah, and this there was a point I wanted to bring this up 20 years ago when I was talking to a Mego collector, John Bonavita. He once said, "Don't tell anybody what you're looking for because they'll look for it."
Really?
Yeah, it was, you know, back when you really competitive and you cared, and you know, I realize now, like, I'm at a point in my life, and this isn't bragging, but I'm just sort of like, you know, I'm good. There's always stuff to look for, but I'm very, very laid back these days. And I kind of enjoy it. I kind of, like, you know, my victories in collecting, I don't know about you, but my victories in collecting are often things that are, like, $20 now.
Kinda. I'm not after the the big thing. You know, here's the thing. Like, you know, I think we've talked about this. Back in the, you know, early 90s, I had a huge James Bond collection.
Yeah.
And a huge Indiana Jones collection. I had everything. Bond, I didn't have everything. But I had a lot. Like, if I went back to try to get the Corgis that I had that were mint boxed back in the early 90s, it would be triple, you know, what they were back then.
Yeah.
And of course, no internet, so you're dealing with. You know, I had a guy in Germany, I had a couple guys in the UK, I had a guy in Italy. But those days are done. I just every now and then I see something and go, I've got to have that before I die. And you know, well, just before we get to the Grails, like recently, this one was a pretty penny, but I couldn't help myself. I found something that I thought had never existed that I searched for. You know, for 20 some years. And then with the internet, you know, just all the time, I looked for this thing and there's no proof of its existence. You know, the great thing about Brian and a lot of the stuff that he tries to get is like, he's got the reference material so he can go, oh yeah, holy crap. It looks like they made stuff, you know, for Manimal, but I've never seen it, but here it is in the catalog. And that's one step closer to trying to get it.
That's a nice rush when you realize it exists,
right? Or that it's within your grasp, sort of. And the thing I saw is the Blade Runner fan club kit from 1982, which I truly thought never existed. I thought they never got enough orders to actually make this thing. And I used to look in the back of the magazine and just lust why I didn't bug my mom to like write a check for $8 back then. I don't know. But,
and there's some guy who had a warehouse full of them going, I wish you had.
Well, I found a kit. It's missing one piece, but it is one of my grails. It would have been one of my grails going, no, it doesn't exist. Because, you know, there was nothing made for that movie. There were
the spinner cars. I remember those.
The Ertl diecasts. But, you know, there was a button here, a button there, you know, a novelization.
A disappointing Marvel comic if you're me.
A kid's novelization. They made a kid's version of the book as well. So to find this thing, and everyone knows the history of Blade Runner and like how this thing even, you know, happened. So that was something that, I kind of look at. I've had that recently where I'd look at something and go, oh my God, I wanted that thing. Should I just grab it? And then I've kind of passed it up because I'm at a point now where I have to start deciding, you know, what to sort of let go of and what to kind of stop getting. And then part of it is there's that I can't help it. I've got to own this thing. Like, yeah. I've been hunting for it for so long. So without, you know, concept of necessarily, you know, thinking about the price or, you know, the crazy hunt, what are the things these days that you, if they popped up, that you would have to grab?
Oh, sure. You know, going on to toys, believe it or not, two of them would be jigglers.
Say that again? You faded out when?
Jigglers.
Oh, the Ben Cooper ones.
No, I don't know who made these. I've known for years, and I'm a fan of a movie series called the Blood Island series, which was created, I believe it's Independent International did them?
Okay.
Oh, no, it wasn't Independent International, but they're directed by Eddie Romero, and they were all done in the Philippines with John Ashley, and they're loosely tied into each other. I don't know why. I guess because in my teens I watched these relentlessly on Elvira, and they're just, I love them, and apparently a jiggler was made of the Blood Island monster.
Holy
cow. I have seen one picture of it, and yeah, I'm in love. But no one I know owns one. And if that wasn't enough, about 2 weeks ago, I was speaking to someone who said, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. I love the movie The Green Slime. Have you heard of The Green Slime?
Yeah, it's got that crazy DVD cover with the like space girl on it. Kind of.
Yeah, I've had that poster in every house or apartment I've lived in for the last 25 years. The Green Slime are coming. And, you know, I saw it as a kid, and it had a big impact on me. It isn't a very good film, but it is kind of that, like, it came out the same summer as 2001, and it must have just looked like garbage next to it, you know?
Can I just ask, because I've never seen it.
Oh, okay.
Is it anything like the poster, whatever's going on in that movie?
Totally, yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Big green slime monsters, terrible toy rockets. It's got it all. It's an Italian American Japanese co-production, and believe it or not, it was written by Bill Finger, who also co-created Batman.
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, really.
Yeah, and I love the Green Slime. I'll get into it in records again, but somebody
showed me a jiggler from that.
They did a promo jiggler, and he sent me a picture of it, and it was like, you know, not for sale, of course, you know, but
you can't, there's no way for you to get it.
Not off this fella. I mean, you know, nothing's impossible.
Right. Which if something, you mean if something should happen to this guy, it's like, God forbid.
I wasn't so sinister. I was just like, if somebody,
I get what you mean. I'll get on a plane. I know what you mean. Wink, wink. Yeah.
Get on a plane. I don't know where this gentleman lives.
Find this gentleman. I don't know where. I forgot my assignment.
Yeah.
See, that's cool. That would be. I keep going back to the Manimal thing. Like when you found there was like Manimal rack toys, you were like, it was like, you know, the Shroud of Turin. You found it. You know.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. I actually came across something recently that was a Holy Grail.
Oh, yeah.
No pun intended, but related to Monty Python.
Oh, yeah.
And a friend actually texted me a picture of an LP that was at Amoeba.
Yeah.
Which is Amoeba Records. Yeah, which is a place I go quite a bit. And before I even jumped in the car and he took a picture of this thing, I, you know, analyzed the handwriting. And, you know, it's a long story, but, like, you know, when you buy an autograph, you weren't there, so you don't really know, you can't be sure kind of thing, but I have done the sort of homework on this thing, and in 1977, the Pythons released the Monty Python Instant Record Collection, and what it was sort of a greatest hits, but the packaging was amazing. The packaging folded outward into a box, and when you put it on your shelf, it was a box of, like, record spines. So when you put it on a shelf, the front of the album is there. The Python album is in the front, and the box itself looks like you've got a record collection on your wall. And all the spines had these crazy you know, titles like The Beatles Chauffeurs Sing, you know, with exclamation mark and stuff like that. But the inner sleeve is signed by John Cleese, Terry Jones, Terry Gilliam, and Graham Chapman. And I had some credit at Amoeba, and I had some cash, so I ran over to check this out, and I picked it up, because that edition of the album was UK only, that folded out on the Charisma label. I think over here it was Arista.
Oh, yeah.
So it was from 1977, and I started doing the math. When were those four guys together? You know, Chapman died in 89. So I finally said it had to be the Hollywood Bowl. It had to be the Hollywood Bowl shows that they did in 1980. And this guy had this, you know, brought this thing backstage or something. Because, you know, Chapman's gone. And the Terry Jones one, in parentheses underneath it, he says, I'm really John Cleese, or really John Cleese. And the Gilliam one, he drew a hand drawing a picture with a pencil. And then behind it, you know, was his signature in red Sharpie. So I put that in a frame. So I'm missing Palin. I have Eric Idle's in a book somewhere, but I'm, you know, I have the whole group on the wall. So that was a grail that just happened. I always wanted to have something signed, you know, by the Pythons or a few of them, but I never thought I'd get something with Graham Chapman on it. And then you get that mystery of just, you know, where did it come from sort of thing. It's too elaborate for someone to have, you know, to have goofed it. It's a weird thing to goof. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure that
nobody would use that kind of imagination.
Yeah, exactly. But it's cool doing the math, going, you know, it had to be a UK person that brought the album. Like, how did he get them in? Where were they all? You know, what was that? And so that was very cool. But one of my grails, and again, this is based on catalogs. I don't know if this even exists. We've talked about this company before in the UK called Lone Star.
Oh, yeah.
In the 60s especially, Lone Star had everything. They had Man from U.N.C.L.E., James Bond, Thunderbirds, Doctor Who, Captain Scarlet, Joe 90, The Avengers. Did I say The Avengers?
I can't remember now. Yeah.
John Steed and Emma Peel Avengers. And these catalogs are just a treasure trove of amazing. The main thing Lone Star did were cap pistols. Everything was kind of came around. And then they made a Dalek atomizer sort of, you know, gun that had like,
fluid neutralizer? Was that them?
No, that's like a water pistol, I think. This one shot sucker darts.
Okay. And they had Star Trek as well.
They made the walkie talkies.
Yeah. Well, they were pretty god awful.
You know, with the wire, with the wire across.
For some reason, I find those all the time. They must have flooded the market with those.
Yeah, and that had to be early step, because in the '70s they had Bond still, they had Starsky and Hutch, they had The Professionals. I think they did something, but the '60s catalogs are amazing. They're absolutely amazing, and I found something a good 15 years ago. That again was a holy grail, because again, like Blade Runner, you know, Steed and Peele Avengers, there was little to nothing ever made for that show. There's I think a puzzle, there's a shooting game, there was a few things made for the new Avengers in the '70s. And then of course Product Enterprise, you know, made those amazing 12-inch figures of Steed and Peele.
Right?
Two different sets. They're
there's
gorgeous.
Nothing that Product Enterprise has made that I don't love.
Yeah, those guys worked so hard to make such cool stuff. But Lone Star had two Avengers items, one of which was the John Steed sword stick, and it's like a cane sort of with a curved handle, and you pull it out of the sheath, and it's like a plastic sword. You could also put these little pellets in the bottom of the sheath, and allegedly you were supposed to be able to push the air through with the stick and the pellet would fly out and, you know, kill somebody. So it came on a header card with John Steed, a black and white shot of John Steed holding the stick, the Avengers, and the header card was supposed to have two holes put through it where you then slide the cane through, and the hole at the top is on the rack, and there's your toy in the store. I got one, like, case fresh, without the holes punched out, and still has the little pellets stapled to the card. It's truly one of my prized possessions. I just adore it. But according to the catalog, they made a John Steed bowler hat as well for kids, which I have never been able to find any photographic evidence of whatsoever. It may not have gone, but I just, the thought of a kid wearing that bowler hat. And having the cane and wanting to be John Steed, you know, walking down the street, I find adorable.
I wonder if in the bowler hat there was a sticker, it's highly recommended you have the cane with this to, you know, fend off the beatings you will get.
You don't get beat up too badly.
Yeah. Or maybe the bowler hat is like also a functioning helmet. You know?
Or like an odd job, you know, it's got a blade in the rim. So that would be one of my holy grails. If somebody suddenly found, and this is kind of cool to talk about because a couple times we talked about stuff on the show, I think, and somebody forwarded something. Oh, have you seen it? It was a Kenny Everett. We talked about Kenny Everett once, who was a UK DJ in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And in the early 80s, late 70s, he had the Kenny Everett video show.
Yeah, and I watched
religiously. And then I say that's for the British episode. We can do that with the British episode.
Yeah.
So there was a Kenny Everett bendy of Captain Kremen.
Made by Bendy Toys, right?
Made by Bendy Toys, who made the Buck Rogers and the Tweaky that looks like a phallus. But
Tweaky on a good day looked like a phallus. So.
I can't believe there wasn't one person in the room. Not one person from paper to pitch. Not one person raised their hand and said, "Is it just me or does Tweaky's head look like a penis?" Yeah. Does anybody else in the room think that? No? Okay, we'll just make the show. And then the other person raised their hand and says, "You know, can Gil Gerard button up just a little bit? Not show as much hair, you know, on camera?"
They were just fixated on putting him in tighter and tighter pants.
Right. Poor bastard. So that was Benny. And from that, I found, I think it was on eBay, somebody was just, I got this Captain Kremen bendy for nothing. And it's proudly in my display case because I left it behind. I didn't get it when I was in London the first time. I don't know why I didn't grab it as an 11-year-old. So yeah, that would be one of my grails, is that bowler hat. I don't know. It may not exist. So give me another one for you.
Well, I would have to say that my white whale, my big grail, is a bop bag. Believe it or not, you know Bozo the Clown. There is one, and I know it exists. I know it's real. For the television show, The Monster Squad, it's a Frankenstein. Now GLJ Toys were supposed to do a number of different Monster Squad items.
Right.
The only reason I know, like, there was a Target set and all this other stuff, but the only reason I know that this bot bag exists is it's in two different department store catalogs.
Okay.
And if it's in the department store catalogs, it got made, baby, because it got ordered.
Maybe
not in huge numbers, and I've actually talked to people who have said, "Oh, I had that as a kid," but, you know, these types of things generally are tough to find.
Right. And you've got... You pretty much have it, every bit of Monster Squad that came out, right?
That's like, I don't even think that, if I had to bring that over to show you, it'd probably fit in a shopping bag. You know, there's a puzzle.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And that's one of the things that's kind of exciting about that was these things that, you know, didn't get a huge ringer like Blade Runner or, you know, the Avengers. Like that makes it even more attractive to me that, like, there were so few things out there, and you can go, "I've got them all. I did it." Yeah. You know, I've got the whole...
That's it. Yeah.
I know Monster Squad is a big deal for you. That's it.
Yeah. But it's also, like, the most affordable collection I've ever had. Nothing has cost me very much money.
Right.
But that's been sort of my mantra. Like, the past 6 months, I put things on the site saying, "Hey, I'm really looking for this." And it pays off. It has really paid off.
Yeah.
But the thing that was funny was I was really after the Fantasy Island poster set, you know, the color poster set.
With the markers.
That
artwork is amazing. It's amazing.
It is, and I love poster sets, but I also have this weird preoccupation with Fantasy Island.
You do. You got the costume?
I do not yet.
But isn't there a Ben Cooper Villages or something?
Yes.
Am I crazy? It's a tattoo. There is.
Yeah.
There is. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
It is.
That's so amazing. You've got to get that.
I do.
I gotta
get that.
Oh my God.
a kind person said, you know, I bought that at a yard sale. Are you really interested in buying it? And like really every email back and forth, I was going, yes, I want that. And he was, you know, would you give me $50 for it? And I was like, yes. And you know, the whole, I felt that the whole email exchange right down to I shipped it to you was steeped in sort of sarcasm from the other end. Like the guy was kind of like, here you go, weirdo.
Profiled you, called the cops.
Yeah.
There's this weird guy. All off of that. No, but I can't get the image of a kid
dressed to Survey Village as anyone. They'd be like size accurate and everything.
That's what I mean. I not only can I not imagine somebody pitching it going, you know, it would be a great one this year because that show's pretty popular. Tattoo. You got to get the, you know. And then one kid being in the store going, I want to be tattooed. I don't want to be Batman. I don't want to be Superman. I don't want to be Luke Skywalker. I want to be tattooed and walk down the street in a white suit or whatever with a Village Heads mask. I can't get that out of my head. Like, which kid that would have been?
Yeah. You know, it wouldn't have been me even, and I was a fan of that show, but,
you know. Oh, my God. That would have been brilliant.
I would have wanted to have been a stormtrooper that year. You know?
Well, it's funny that we're talking about costumes because I found another grail. I think everyone listening knows how much I love Flash Gordon, the movie, 1980, and the Filmation series in 79, which I think that first season is one of the greatest, if not the best, animated series ever made. The design, you know, everything, I just adore it. And they're connected. The movie and the Filmation thing are actually connected in many ways. But with Flash Gordon, again, it's really difficult to know what got made, what's out there. You know, I once saw a picture of a Prince Baron Ironon on a t-shirt and just said Baron, you know, it's cool lettering. And when I saw it, you instantly go, there's no way they didn't make a Flash Gordon. So if they made a Flash Gordon, they probably made a Ming. And if they made a Ming, did they make a Voltan, you know, whatever. So I found the Voltan Ironon transfer, which I picked up very, very, very cheap. But right around the same time, you know, I found last year the Collegeville Hawkman Halloween costume, not Voltan, just a generic Hawkman in the box. And when I found that, I thought, there's no way they didn't make a Ming, you know, and some other characters. And then I found the mask, the Flash Gordon mask, but not the costume. And then just a couple weeks ago, I found the Collegeville Ming Halloween costume in the box. And that was pretty thrilling because it's awesome. And there was so little stuff made for that movie. And to think that the movie came out December of 80 and this thing's got, you know, 81 stamped on it, you know, for Halloween. It didn't do well in the States. It's incredible that this thing got to the shelves. So they made a Flash Gordon, a Ming and a Hawkman. And I don't know what else they made. And then in Italy, I found one of the weirdest collectibles I have. This was, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. From Italy, I found a Prince Baron, quote, play suit. And it's in this amazing box with artwork from the advance teaser for Flash Gordon. And it says Prince Baron on the side of the box. And you lift the box up, and it's like this weird brown, you know, leather-looking brown and a little bit of green, you know, Robin Hood type outfit. Looks nothing like the outfit in Flash Gordon, but other characters are listed on the side of the box, and I can't find photographic evidence anywhere of any of these things. The Italian play suits, and they're licensed. You know, it's licensed by King Features, and you go, what the hell? But what's ironic is it's not that I'm trying to find it. It's one thing to try to find it to get, and you go, God, that's really, you know, why is it difficult? Of all the millions of people in the world that love things, I'm surprised there isn't some source to tell us about certain things. And I can't even find photographic proof of the one that I have, this play suit, whatever the hell this thing is from Italy. I love that stuff. I love that kind of hunt. So I found that. The other thing I was going to say in the same vein, that would be a grail. When Mattel made the action figure line. They made a couple of ships, the big inflatable ship. They made the Ming shuttle, which is actually part of the inflatable ship, just a different color. And then they made, you know, seven or eight characters, action figures. Beautiful, beautiful range. I love that range. I obsessed over it as a kid. So as I grew up, I've got the ships box. I got a couple of figures on the card. And I didn't realize, and I think you've got proof in a catalog. I think you have a Mattel catalog that shows that entire range, the yes, Flash Gordon range. They made this, Mattel made this electronic pistol. This was kind of genius.
They made it a few times.
They made it a few times. And what's brilliant is the little gun that comes with Flash Gordon is shaped like that electronic pistol. It has the egg on the front. It's the same handle. They made a little miniature version for this, because he doesn't carry one in the series. They made a little miniature version of a gun for him to hold, that it looks just like the electronic pistol. So Mattel also made a green version of that pistol called the Ming pistol in a box, and they made a Flash Gordon one. I found the Ming pistol 20 some years ago in the box. I have never seen it since. I have never seen other pictures of it. There's nothing out there to tell me what the and the electronic Flash Gordon one, I've never even seen in the box. I have searched for it for 25 years, and I've never, ever, ever seen that it exists, but I've got one loose, you know, out of the box. So that is a massive grail. If anybody knows anybody that can get a hold of that, that would be, you know, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, be done. Give me another one. Give me another grail. I don't know how we are for time. But.
We got a few more minutes. I guess, you know, the other grail I would have is in terms of props.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a huge prop collection. In fact, I only own one, and that's a prop from the TV series of Logan's Run.
Nice.
But I would love to have a Sandman jumper from Logan's Run, the TV series. And I've missed a couple of them. I missed one for $200 once.
Can I just say that I would love to see you in the Sandman jumper from Logan's Run?
I doubt that anyone is a lummoxy build like me, so I don't know, but and I'm not much for cosplay these days. and I wouldn't wear the pants,
pull a Stephen Collins.
Yeah. Oh God, you know what? You say that for 2 seconds. Star Trek. I put Star Trek the Motion Picture on the other day, and my wife walked in, and I said, "Just take a look at Seventh Heaven." And you know, he walks by, and she goes, "Did they not have people to tell him that?"
Again, there's not one person on the set that goes, "You know, you can see everything." There's no one else,
fella.
There's no one else. Am I the only one that's seeing the? You know, where's the cup? Did you leave the cup in your dressing room? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's
insane.
The opposite of, like, you know, they want you to see Randy Quaid in Christmas Vacation, but
right,
you
know, right.
That's part of the joke, but
and he's got all these scenes
laughing.
He's got all these scenes with Shatner, and poor Shatner having a hard time keeping it together.
Shatner seems distracted.
distracted.
And I think the scene I was watching, Ilea makes an appearance, and I'm like, oh no.
Uh oh. They just met.
Yeah.
This isn't gonna go
excited.
Well.
Yeah. But
so a Sandman jumper. You got the gun. You also got that crazy Japanese gun for UFO too, don't you?
Yeah, that was a huge grail. Yeah.
I actually got that off a friend.
So
I
that
love
was
that
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love that thing.
The only other grail I can think of toy wise is like rumor stuff.
Right.
You know, like, I've heard there's an Inframan doll from the 70s. Inframan is this batshit crazy Shaw Brothers science fiction movie I love. And I just found out recently, I have the poster in the other room. It's by Basil Gogos, who did Famous Monsters.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, I always loved the poster, but I didn't realize he did it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know if any Inframan toys really exist or not. And
right.
So, you know, as much as I would love them, you know, I could just be chasing a ghost. So.
But it's fun. I mean, it's You know, it's part of it.
It's what keeps you going. It's not getting toys in the mail. It's the hunt.
Yeah.
And the being right. I love being right that they made something.
Well, it's also that, you know, again, we're gonna sound like, you know, grandpas here, but the internet, I mean, just the madness we had to go through back in the day, you know, to find stuff through the toy shop or, you know, somebody mentioned.
It's amazing, you know, it's amazing you say that. I look back at that fondly, but if I pick up a journal, and I used to be very meticulous about what I bought and when I got it,
right.
It's insane. It's like June 1st, sent away for Dalek. September 12th, got Dalek.
Yeah. It's true. I went on a bit of a hunt a couple weeks ago, and in one go, I found the German Flash Gordon sticker album by Panini, the Panini one, filled.
I collect Panini stuff too.
I mean, it's filled. Every spot has a sticker. This thing is completely filled. I got the Spanish sticker album. Similar, different stickers, which is blank, but it's pristine. I found another, like, press kit sort of thing. I found the t-shirt iron-on. I found the costume. All kind of in one go. But I ordered this German sticker thing, and it came from, I want to say it came from the UK. And I swear to you, it was here 2 days later. It showed up. I don't know how that worked, but it was like 2 or 3 days and the thing showed up. When we used to send away, I used to have like a pen pal in the UK that would send me, you know, Doctor Who annuals and things like that. And I try to send him the American Pinnacle paperbacks. I mean, I was like 12 or 13 doing this stuff. And it just took forever to get packages or letters, you know? And if it was a company, I mean, it was not only the mailing of it, but when are they going to get to my order, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there was nothing like coming home and seeing a package waiting in the mailbox.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you, that was a thrill, and I vividly remember getting parcels. Now it's like, you know.
Right, it's true. I mean, but back then,
I still get excited for stuff, but I mean, it's not, back then it was an event. And
I think I told this story before. So forgive me if it's, you know, you've heard it before. But when I was a kid, the bus used to drop me off at the corner, the very corner, and our house is in the middle of the street. And when I started...
that's a madness lyric.
I know. I told Suggs the story, and he decided, he ran, went off. I'll be right back. Just a minute. Hey, hold on. That's a good song. Goes in the corner, and next thing you know, it's a top 10 hit. So it's in the middle of the street. And when you walked down to it, we had two mailboxes. One, you know, one of those metal ones with a hinge that you put just the smaller envelopes in, and then a big orange plastic thing where the newspapers went, Sunday paper went. And when I would walk down the street from the corner, by the time I got, you know, four houses away, I could see that mailbox. And I got closer and closer. And then I could, if I saw a package in that mailbox, my pace quickened. I, instead of going all the way to the back of the house to enter, you know, the back of the house, I would run up the front steps and grab that thing. And it was like drugs, you know, it was like, my God, and he was so excited to get a shitty Doctor Who annual with somebody with crayon in some of the pages. That was like,
I share that experience. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I still have a bit of that.
Do you remember the Doctor Who annual that it's the split, like, it's the last Tom Baker one?
And it's got Davison up in the corner?
It's got a picture of Peter Davison. Not Peter Davison as Doctor Who.
No, from Tristan.
Just Peter Davison.
Yeah, just him.
And they milk that, like, 60 times in that book. It's like, this is the only picture we have of him. We don't know what he's wearing. And it's just the strangest thing.
Yeah, because he was a face. I mean, he was.
Yeah.
That show with All Creatures Great and Small was a big. That was a big show. Yeah. So he was a bit of a face. But yeah, I think I had that one. I had a bunch of them. I had a mostly Tom Baker. They were just mental. It just made no sense. The stories.
Yeah, they get really, really dark palettes, and yeah,
just
weird. We got to do a British Annuals minisode.
Yes, we should. I've got a Star Trek one that's insane that I picked up somewhere. So the other thing I'd say,
okay.
Well, I was going to say back to Lone Star.
Yeah.
They made a ton of Bond stuff. They made pistols. They were making them up through the 80s and early 90s, you know, with different, you know, doppelgangers in the packaging and, you know, nothing to do with the movie or anything. But they made these cap pistols, and they made a Thunderball harpoon gun, like a big long thing. They added a front and a back, you know, handle for the, you know, for your shoulder, with a huge sucker dart. You know, they made stuff like Frogmen, you know, when Thunderball was so huge, and they made this deluxe attaché case that is just a thing of beauty. The stuff that's in, you know, it's the walkie-talkies, the cap pistol, the stuff you add to the cap pistol, and all that stuff. I'd love to get that one day. It would be a fortune.
You've just brought up a memory of something I've always wanted but never been able to afford.
What?
The Prisoner Mini Moke by Dinky.
It's funny you say that. I found one.
Yeah. Did you?
Well, I found one that the guy repaired. It's an original Mini Moke. He made a brand new box for it, but the Mini Moke is original, and it's painted and everything. And I almost got it. This was 2 weeks ago when I was doing this crazy search for stuff. I
actually was just Googling it while we were talking, and I think I found the same one.
Yeah.
I didn't buy it.
Well, let me know let me know if you want it. I'm thinking about getting it.
No, you know what? It's I love The Prisoner. It's one of my top 10 favorite shows of all time.
Right.
But it's such a goofy vehicle.
It is. You know? And that's part of the reason.
It's a golf cart, essentially.
You know they made a little car. Did you ever see the Gerry Anderson show, The Secret Service?
Oh, I actually saw it as a kid in French.
With Stanley Unwin
They
made that car.
I know.
I mean, that I gotta have that someday. You know, so yeah, I want the Mini Moke.
Really?
Yes. I don't know why, but I definitely want the Mini Moke. I think I might actually get
Father
that.
Father Unwin's car.
So that attaché case would be something, and they also, I mean, as little as I've ever seen of this John Steed sword stick. They also made one for Adam Adamant, the series Adam Adamant Lives, in 67. They made his cane, which was a sword, different handle. It exists. I've seen pictures of it. It exists. I don't know how I'd ever come across this thing. So that would be another grail to get that. Could be, you know, I've got the annual. I think they made an annual and that sword stick, and that was it for that series. So I'd love to get that. You got another grail before we get on to Charo?
I'm going to just switch to Charo. Switch to records, and again, it goes back to the Green Slime. The Green Slime has an amazing theme song. I believe it's performed by Charles Fox, who did the Happy Days theme song.
Performed by who?
Charles Fox?
Charles Fox? Who's that?
He performed the Happy Days theme song. That's all I remember him from.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they released a 45 of the Green Slime with a beautiful jacket.
Ooh.
And every record store I stop in, I try to find it.
Right.
One of these days it will be mine. But I have been looking for about 25 years. You know, there's always that one on eBay that's $250.
Right.
That's a little more than I want to pay for this thing.
Right.
You know, I you know, obviously it's sitting there still on eBay for $250.
Oh, come on. Let's get it. We should do a Kickstarter. Just get this.
If I was going to do a Kickstarter, it would be, you know, not for that.
Well, we'll pretend. We'll Kickstarter, you know, because you've got some horrible disease, and then we'll take the money and go get you that record.
Oh, that sounds like great karma.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Did I tell you about the Nice Guys soundtrack? Did you see that yet?
Yeah, you showed me pictures of that beautiful thing.
Oh my God, it's amazing! It's absolutely amazing. The cover has, you know, an X-rated sort of paper strip across the front, and then inside, well, you know, this is, you know, it is what it is. Is a centerfold of Misty Mountains from the movie with 3D glasses to go with it because it's 3D. But it also comes with...
The posters were intense in that what you're showing.
Well, you know what's funny? I got an extra one. They're supposed to be...
Oh, really?
Okay, so each one is double-sided. I think there's three different ones, and they're double-sided. And I got two of the same one in this record. I think that was a mistake. I think I was only supposed to get one. So if I wanted to, I could display both of those. But they're fake porno posters from the 70s with Misty Mountains.
Yeah.
And they're amazing, absolutely amazing. The credits on them, you know, a Sid Shattuck production, the whole thing. And a business card for the Nice Guys that came with it too. But the vinyl, it's a double album. So they split the soundtrack up on two discs. And the vinyl is like you know, pink marble kind of. It's got a design in the vinyl. It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
What else? You get another one? You get another Grail? Or you want
Nothing
to talk about
I can
Charo?
Think of it. Just,
well, I'll add.
Let's
I'll,
talk about Charo.
I'll throw in my last one. You'll appreciate it. When I was a kid, one of my favorite things ever, and it's still one of my favorite things, and I kept it in the box, pristine, never lost a bit of it, is the Ark diecast figure. Is it Baltan, the bird guy?
Baltan Seajan?
Yeah, is it either the bird face with the little, you know, beak that goes down, kind of? So it's by Ark, and it's a diecast figure, diecast everywhere, those big claws, and then each joint is a connectable piece, and you can pop the things off and put them upside down and put them in his back, and he comes with like a Gatling gun, this little Gatling gun that you put all these yellow missiles in and turn the, and it's peer, peer, like, you know, nobody got, you know, it's amazing what this thing had, that you could have lost all these bits. But I always,
and
like,
I love that you're playing with an iconic Ultraman villain, not knowing what he is. And I loved that about the 70s.
Exactly. My dad got it for me for my birthday. And the two gifts were that and the Marvel Hulk compendium that on the front says, you know, TV's biggest star kind of thing. So it was like 78 or so when I got, I don't know where on earth my dad found this thing. I don't know how he could have found it, where he found it. I've asked him about it. He has no recollection.
They were sold in the U.S.
I don't know where he found the damn thing, but it was one of the coolest birthday things. And to this day, I'm obsessed with that thing. And there's not a lick of English on the package, not a word of English. But I played with that thing until it you know, nearly dissolved into dust. And I still have it. It's beautiful. But on the back of the packaging, there's three or four other characters that they made. The robot dude with the antennas out the side of his head, the gorilla, and a couple others. And I'd love to get that entire series someday, all the Ark diecasts.
They are really memorable toys.
Yeah. So those are the Grails. Now, we'll talk about Charo.
Sure. Now, you're like me in the fact that you just accept Charo because you have no idea where she comes from.
I never understood.
She was just famous.
She just showed up. She just was like, you know,
and,
where'd she
you
come
know,
from?
You, like, I know you. You were a full adult man by the time you were seven, but
yes,
me,
I was dating
I
heavily.
Had no idea why she was so interesting to me. You know, even though now I get it, she was like overtly sexual,
crazy and, sexual. She was,
and it, even though I had no idea what to do with a girl, I was already starting to go, I like her.
You should have called me. I could have helped. I could have walked.
Yeah, you would explain.
I would have walked.
Yeah, you probably had a mustache by that point.
But it was like she was. I mean, you look at those clips, and it's like there's nothing left to the imagination with these with the outfits.
No,
and just she blows into a room and just. My recollection of her, the thing that the image that's constantly in my head. Is her on, I mean, if I think of her, is her on the Carson show, on the Tonight Show.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever she was saying or doing, Johnny trying to swing with it. And between Johnny and whoever else was on the couch, they were just like leering at her. Like everything she did was like, oh my God, because she was so out there.
You want to hear this? Because this is interesting.
Yeah.
How old do you think Charo is today?
She's got to be. She's got to be late 60s, early 70s.
She's 65.
Holy crap. That means...
Yeah, she was a kid.
She was a kid.
Yeah.
She didn't look like a kid to me.
No, but like she's born in 1951.
So cut to the system.
So like when she was on Love Boat, she's like 25, 26.
Yeah. So she was on the Tonight Show and she was young. But she felt older, didn't she? Didn't she feel like...
Well, everybody looked older to me then.
Right,
But, you know, I was just watching A Love Boat.
Foster Brooks was only 40 on Tonight Show. He looked old, but he was only 40. What a career. I just saw him in something. I don't know if it was the Wild Wild West or some other show I picked up real cheap to look at. I forget what it was, but he just rolls in, does a drunk guy thing, and he's off screen.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, made a career out of...
insane career.
He was the senior Wences of...
Drunk guys.
Drunk guys.
No, there's a void, Jason. There's a void that needs to be filled.
He came on a show drunk. You know, the whole idea was that he's hammered and everybody's laughing at it. I love it. And that's all that he did. I don't know if he did what he was before that. I don't know what he was after. I don't know. Nope. So she's only 65. So yeah, so she was a fixture of 70s television. I don't remember much
if
of it.
You had
80s.
A variety show, yep. She was coming.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she was also, you know, not a lot of you know, monikered performers back then. It was her and Cher. Sting hadn't really shown up, but it was like she was a brand. It was like she was a brand before she even got there. I don't know where she came from. She also played guitar. Didn't she play guitar?
She's a classical guitarist.
Yes, that's right.
She's talented.
Yes.
She's a singer. But I think that, you know, I think that her biggest talent was, and she was an actress, obviously.
Right.
She was extremely sexy woman.
And she'd come on, most people would come on shows to kind of pimp something or talk about.
Yeah, no, she just came on.
She just showed up and it was like, let her roll. And, you know, and she also, I think she played up she was goofy. You know what I mean? She wasn't afraid to make fun of herself and be goofy, you know, knowing how sexual she was and how she was coming off. You know, she played with everybody in the room, like she'd get the English mixed up or whatever, and she was goofy. You know, what is she doing? Is she playing? You know, Atlantic City or what? What is she doing?
I have no idea what she does.
We should get a road trip going. We should meet up at the Charo show.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she's married and she has a son, from what I recall. She's in the weirdest thing is she. I think you remember when Wayne's World was a thing.
Yes,
there was a Wayne's World book, and I'm pretty sure that they just interviewed Charo in the middle of it. Like it was a weird, random thing, and she, you know, she was very nice about it.
But wait, what did she, like, was she some, is she from Spain? I forget where she's from.
I think she's from Spain, yeah.
But she was a talent there and then came here to do her
thing, she came, maybe she was a talent, but I mean, I think at 15 or 16, she married a 60-year-old man named Xavier Cugat and
that was the
joined his orchestra.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And, you know, she sang in his orchestra on the Ed Sullivan show, and you know, and I guess she was a Vegas performer, and she was making good money being a Vegas performer.
Right.
You know, like her credits are like Love Boat, of course. She was April on Love Boat, Donnie and Marie, Tony Orlando and Don, Captain and Tennille, The John Davidson Show, Mike Douglas. She was on the stupid Brady Bunch variety show.
God, I miss Mike Douglas. Wasn't he great?
Yeah, I love watching Mike Douglas clips just to see his suits.
I love to see his suits, and I love to see him, you know, if something wacky's about to happen, or, you know, John and Yoko or whatever, he goes with it. He says, you know, and then he did this. You know, he was never judgmental in whoever he had on or whoever guest hosted or whatever their bag was. He was cool with it. You know, he rolled with it. He was great. That was a great show. It was better than Merv. Rick Moranis. He was
Rick Moranis, Merv Griffith. Oh yeah, that is the greatest thing ever.
That'll be great.
Yeah. Wasn't it like, ooh, yeah.
Ooh, that's something. Ooh, we'll be right back.
Yeah,
that was Merv Griffin. It's genius. So yeah, she was a fixture. She was like, you know, she started. It was like, you know, a lot of those TV specials got to a point. I don't know if you've ever seen this, and this should be an episode. The variety stuff.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Ringo TV special?
No, only the SCTV parody.
Okay, it's
where he's just drumming the whole time.
No, it's he's in it, but it's 1978, and he's you know, the script is, you know, oh, I just, you know, I'm constantly being hounded to get in the studio, do this and do that. I just want a break. I just want to get out of here and have a break. Cut to, I'm not joking, Ringo playing another guy that looks like Ringo, called like Ogner Rats, you know, an acronym of or whatever
yeah, it's real clever.
Of Ringo Starr. So Ogner Rat, whatever it is, and they bump into each other, and he decides, and this guy's he's a you know, TV geek with the tape between the glasses and the nose. Greg Evigan pushes him around, tries taking his car, stuff like that. So Ringo and this guy switch identities. So Ringo can go have a break, and this guy, everyone thinks he's Ringo, basically.
So this is the Prince and the Pauper, yeah.
The cast, okay? Ringo Starr, John Ritter as his manager, Art Carney as Ogner Ratz' father, who's an awful person, uh-huh. Carrie Fisher, who is in a video, you know, for Your 16, the dancing around with Ringo, oh. And I swear to God, the manager tries to get Ringo back on track and gets this hypnotist sort of guy, and it's Vincent Price.
Yeah.
That was the cast of the show. Vincent Price started to show up in everything. He was one of those guys like Paul Lynde. Remember how, wasn't Paul Lynde like a regular on Donnie Marie? He was on every week.
I think so, and that's one of the things I wanted to point out was that thanks to this Charo search today, I saw the worst thing I've ever seen ever.
That is, and I can't even explain what the flip that is trying to be, that clip.
Everybody complains about the Paul Lynde Halloween special. Paul Lynde Goes Mad is, I've only seen 2 minutes of it, and that's enough to just make me want to jump off a roof.
Yeah, I started to stab myself.
It's got Charo in it.
Charo's in it.
It's got
Vicki Lawrence.
Vicki Lawrence and Marie Osmond.
Right.
They sing what has to be the worst thing I've ever heard.
You got to put this clip up for this episode.
Oh, I will.
You have to put it up.
And then Paul Lynde is being beaten and chased by women. And there's a metaphor in there, but I'm tired.
It's so, you watch it, and he's Brian sent it to me, and I wrote back, I said, and he said, my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And I wrote back and said, yeah, somebody wrote that. There were a bunch of people in a room that said that was a good idea, you know, doing probably just piles of cocaine, saying, no, you know what we should
never
do?
Has...
And they probably just put it together with whatever they had on the set, the rack and whatever else, and they wrote a sketch around it, and it is... That was our entertainment. That's what we had, you know, in the summer.
Never has canned laughter been so stretched.
Oh my God! You gotta post that.
Yeah,
you know, Telly Savalas had a special.
Yes, and I've seen
Guess what it was called?
In fact, you know what? I think what we got to do is an episode of Trainwreck specials.
Yes. Yes, I'm in. Wasn't the Telly Savalas one called Telly?
Oh, could be. You know, when you watch old SCTVs and they have, like, the Gene Shalit special, they're not that far off. I mean, they're, you know, they're really not that far off from what really happened.
It's true. Everybody got a show. You know, like, Tony Orlando and Dawn were a Vegas thing that suddenly they had a number one hit, and someone at the network said, give them a show. You know, they're really popular in Vegas. They have a number one hit. Give them a show. Same thing with Captain Tennille. Like, it's incredible how many people got opportunities on television with one record that did something.
Yeah.
And they just, that's all we had. That was it.
You know, and the thing that always kills me is, like, these two people, they sing, you know, Wuss Rock or whatever you want to call it. Or, you know, let's also put them in comedy sketches.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get the captain... Let's get all the comical madness the captain's holding back. Get it into a sketch.
And you know what's funny is it's all based on Sonny and Cher. Sonny and Cher had a hit show.
Right.
And it's cheesy and campy.
I used to hate it. I used to hate it as a kid. I'd go, "What is her problem? Like, get off his back." You know? Every episode, like, just get off his back, man. He's trying to...
But she's a VAMP vamp.
Oh, my God. I used to hate that show. I remember it, though. What year was it on? Because I remember it. Would I ever remember it?
I remember it, too. It must have been on, like, Sunday nights, because I distinctly remember watching it at my grandparents' house. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, that was... Huge show.
You know what I love too, and somebody sent it to me once as like a sound clip, and I gotta have it. Is the on ABC they used to do, it was the ABC Sunday Night Movie. The opening graphics with the stars coming on, dun 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 dun, and it was like, you know,
tonight
on ABC Sunday Night Movie, Moonraker, parental discretion is advised. Roger Moore is James Bond, you know, and then it would, and a Bond film would run for 4 hours because the Bond films were like 2 hours and 15 minutes, and then with the commercials it just kept going. But I love that opening, that music of that opening.
It just brings back every fun movie you ever saw.
Yes,
on that thing.
Yes,
yeah,
and especially when it was like the first time, tonight.
Yeah,
for the first time, you know, first time broadcast. And you know, I mean, that's how I, you know, found the Bond films, was the ABC Sunday Night Movie, you know?
City TV for me. They used to have weeks, you know, marathons, ape marathons,
right.
Bond marathons. And, you know, they were terrible prints, but there's kind of added to it, you know?
I just remember, having no flipping clue who George Lazenby was. When they ran Majesty's, I was a kid, but I thought it was like a made-for-TV movie version or something. I didn't understand who the hell he was.
Yeah, I remember being confused by it, too, because it was, like, Telly Savalas was Blofeld, and
yes.
None of it made sense to me.
Well, I used to have, I think I have it somewhere, of vinyl. There was a TV special called The Incredible World of James Bond. And on the back of the album, you know, they had, like, six songs each side, like, you know, Underneath the Mongo Tree and stuff like that. Jump Up, Jump Up, Jamaica, Jump Up, Jump Up. And I used to play this record over and over and over and over again as a kid. The Bond theme, all this stuff. And on the back was, you know, Sean Connery, like, getting a massage. All these pictures of Sean Connery kicking a guy. And I showed my brother, because I think it was a hand-me-down from my brother or something. And I said, "What's going on? Like, what's with the pictures?" And he's like, that's the other James Bond. It's Sean Connery. He's James Bond. Because I only knew Roger Moore. He was my Bond. Oh. That was it.
Oh, you're about to get your world right.
Yeah, well, again, I was like six or seven putting this together, trying to find out who produced the film, you know, what year, and who's got the rights. And I'm like seven trying to find this shit out. And I knew there was a different Bond, was the back of it. Because the TV special was 65, and I worked for Thunderball. And that's what the album was.
Just what you said there is being 7 years old trying to figure out the rights. I knew there was a reason we were friends. I was that kid who was like, well, no, the Mego Iron Man can't play with the Super Friends because he's from another universe. You know?
Right. Well, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Why are they airing? You know, what's going on with? I mean, I was the kid that walked around. I kid you not, walked around toy stores in 1980, searching high and low for Flash Gordon toys for the movie.
Yeah, me too.
I thought
I gave up.
There must, you know, I'm missing something, because I would check the Montgomery Ward catalog, everything, because everything got toys. Everything got toys.
You know what? I want to tell you. I'm gonna have to wrap up here because. But my final grail I didn't mention was I'm looking for an envelope, and that envelope was the black action figures that I got through
Shreddies.
And I would pay insane amounts for that envelope. You know,
it's got to be out there. It's got to be out there.
Yeah. Somebody saved it, and I'll find it one of these days.
Yes. That's a great one. I remember you talking about that, for the all the Shreddies you had to eat to get.
You just stirred up that memory. So on that note, we should probably
let's wrap it up. That was a good. That's pretty good chunk of time, right?
That was a fun 50th. Yes.
Yeah, that's our 50th anniversary or episode or whatever.
Yes, 50th episode.
So again, thank you everyone for listening and, you know, making suggestions and all that
so
stuff. We appreciate it. I know it sounds egotistical, but please keep it coming so we know that you're listening and that you dig it and, you know, maybe what else you want to talk about. I hope this was a fun thing to listen to, the stuff that we're into and that we do and other madness, because we couldn't really keep it on track like we always don't.
Yep.
But thank you so much. We appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk again. 50 more episodes, we'll still be doing it, basically.
Just hoping.
All right.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, man, that was awesome.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, no, I had a lot of fun with that.